I was a child once. Alright, into the stories. I was a good kid growing up. I did what my parents said, followed their rules, ate what they put on my plate. Maybe a bit too well. Flashback to the green bean incident. My mom told me that when I was a small toddler, sometimes I'd have horrible tantrums and rip all the sheets off my bed and sweep everything on my shelves onto the floor in an emotional outrage. She'd have to crack my door open afterwards and say, "Are you done?" so she could help me put everything back. If I wasn't, she'd lock me in my room for a bit longer as I continued being an indignant little tornado and try again in 10 minutes. I've grown out of that phase, luckily. I'm so conditioned to want to follow the rules and not do anything bad that people on multiple occasions have told me, "Jaden, you're so good all the time. You've got to be rebellious every once in a while." And I say, no. Is that a start? I was such an obedient kid, I've only been grounded once in my entire life. And that story is pretty pathetic. I was maybe 6 at the time and my parents were going out for a date night or whatever to get out of the house. Understandable. Jax was a pretty exhausting kid to deal with, so they left us with a babysitter. Now, as a kid, having a babysitter is emotionally conflicting. On one hand, you don't want this rando middle school kid to be telling you what to do. Go to bed? Psh, you're not my mom. You're not even old enough to go to the bathroom at school without asking for permission. Don't tell me what to do. But on the other hand, babysitters let you get away with way more than your parents. Oh, yeah, mom always lets us have 3 Oreos. It's okay, it's fine, don't worry. Normally, we only get to have 2 Oreos. We're so sneaky. It was getting late that night, and before it was my bedtime, I wanted to play outside on our rickety little playset. Now, I'd already gotten ready for bed. I was in my pajamas and brushed my teeth, but I figured it's not past my bedtime yet, so everything's fair game. So the babysitter watched me swing on the swings for like 5 minutes and then go down the slide one time. In the morning, when my parents were back, I woke up and they were like, "You're in trouble." Did I do something? What do you think you did? I don't know. Why do adults say that to children, by the way? What do you think you did? I don't know. Seems like you don't even know what I did and are trying to get me to rat myself out. The babysitter told us that last night you played in the backyard in your pajamas.
What?
We don't want you playing outside in your pajamas. You're grounded tomorrow.
What the?
So I was grounded for a day because I played outside in my pajamas. But I cheated like 5 minutes of TV by sneak watching from around the corner, so who's the rebellious one now? There's this golf course a block or two down from my house that had a little lake, and my dad and I would ride our bikes to it every once in a while to feed the ducks. Also, yes, I know ducks shouldn't eat bread. If you didn't know that, don't feed wild ducks bread. Give them candy bars. We were feeding the ducks, minding our own business, when all of a sudden we hear from across the lake,
"Mabel! Mabel!"
There's a neighborhood of houses next to the golf course so people could look out and see the golfers. And in the distance across the lake, some lady was yelling,
"Mabel! Mabel!"
Huh. Wonder where Mabel is.
"Mabel, get over here! What are you doing?"
Oh, she's talking to me.
"Mabel, you're in so much trouble!"
My dad and I didn't know what to do. This lady in the distance thought I was Mabel when I was not Mabel, I am Jaden, but she didn't know that.
"Mabel, what are you doing? Get back here!"
We pedaled away. Now, let's put ourselves in the point of view of this lady across the lake. She walks out into her backyard. What a wonderful evening. I think I'm gonna treat myself to some relaxation time out in my backyard. Working my 9-to-5 job and managing 3 children as a single mom sure is hard work, especially since my doctor says I need to lower my stress because it's starting to take a toll on my depression. Okay, maybe a bit too much creative interpretation. She's in the backyard, she looks out across the lake, and what? Who's that? Is that little old Mabel across the lake? How'd she get there? And wait, is that a strange man with her? What the?
"Mabel, what are you doing? Get over here!"
That girl is in so much trouble when she gets back home. I've told her so many times about the dangers of—
Is she peddling away with him?
I hope Mabel wasn't in too much trouble when she got back home. Sorry, Mabel. This story didn't happen necessarily during my childhood, more teenagehood, but I think it's kind of funny, so I'm telling it. I went ice skating with a couple friends one winter, maybe when I was 15, 16. It was busy, but not too busy. Side note, one time my friend invited me to go ice skating, and we were the only two there. It was dope, but also felt like a weird ice rink twilight zone. Anyway, so we were skating around, you know, like what we went there to do. I'm not anywhere near close to a good ice skater, but I hadn't fallen on my butt or head, so I considered it a successful day. After a while, we decided to do one more loop around the rink, and right before we were done, this little boy skates up to me. I wasn't very old at the time, but he was definitely younger than me, maybe 13 or something, I don't know. I looked down at him confused, and he goes, "I like your hat." Oh, by the way, I was wearing a knitted hat that looked like a raccoon, so it was a good hat. "Will you hold something for me?" Okay. And I'll never forget what he says. This is possibly one of the smoothest things I've ever heard from a little 13-year-old boy. So he goes, "Will you hold something for me?" And I go, like, okay, what is it? And he goes, "My hand." No expectations on what he was gonna say, but that one definitely caught me off guard. I was so startled by his, what would you even call that? Pickup line request that I stumbled back, forgetting I was on ice skates. I didn't fall, but I definitely did one of those weird twisty maneuvers that your body pulls when it's off balance and trying not to fall down. The boy skated off because I think he wasn't expecting to actually physically startle me. Thinking about it, if you were to try and use a pickup line on someone and their immediate response is to be so surprised they almost fall backwards, that I don't know how to interpret that. Obviously, it's not what you want, but I mean, that's gotta be some sort of achievement.
When Carl Jacobs popped up in my DMs asking if I wanted to be in Mr. Beast's upcoming video, I'll be honest, my gut reaction was fear. Mr. Beast has basically become YouTube's own mad scientist. He can snap his fingers and shape reality at this point. Despite part of me thinking I should just stay in the comfort of my own home, I felt really honored to be invited and kinda just wanted to show up, say hi, and then realistically go home within the first round of eliminations. I accepted the ominous invitation and before I knew it was flying to North Carolina being handed a custom uniform, all before even knowing what I actually just signed up for. I didn't even know if there was a prize for the winner at this point. Walking into the green room, I was expecting to not know anyone, but to my relief, I saw a lot of familiar faces. I even used this time to ask MatPat what it was like to meet Scott Cawthorn, and he told me FNAF secrets. So already, this trip was more than worth it. Eventually, we were herded down a long, mysterious hallway until we saw it. The Mr. Beast Cube. After everyone was filed inside, we were told the last person to leave the cube would be deemed the winner. And also win $1 million for their subscribers.
This is for $1 million?
The challenge began. Immediately, people started jumping in the giant pile of real money that was inside, throwing handfuls of bills in the air, laughing, mingling. To pass the time, James and I drew our cartoon characters out of dollar bills on the floor. The staff came in and ended up giving everyone their own personal vlog camera to document their POV of the challenge. And I think I genuinely was the only person who didn't record a single second of footage on that thing. I just thought, I'm not gonna use this footage because I'm not gonna make a video out of it, and they're gonna have plenty of other people's footage to use. In hindsight, maybe it would have been a good idea to record something, just in case. I don't know, maybe the Mr. Beast team would end up actually wanting to use some of my footage. Who's to say? After maybe an hour or two, Jimmy came out for the first bonus challenge. A single free throw. Miss and you're eliminated, but make it, and not only do you get to come back into the cube, you also win a Cybertruck for one of your subscribers. They had 50 people subscribe just in a room waiting for something to happen. I'll be honest, when Jimmy explained the extra credit challenge, I was like, hell no, I'm not going up to miss a free throw and leave immediately after nothing's happened yet. If my subscriber back there knew what was going on, they 100% would have understood they weren't getting called up for nothing. If I remember correctly, maybe 2 people ended up making their baskets and 3 people were eliminated. I could be wrong, I don't remember because I didn't vlog it. While chatting with friends, Ludwig walked up and asked if I wanted to do a dice bet. With nothing else to do, I agreed. And to no one's surprise, I lost. And an evil expression washed over Ludwig's face. Alright, since you lost, I want you to walk up to Kai Sanat and introduce yourself with, "Hi Kai, I'm Jaden. So which of my videos have you seen?" Maybe I should have just missed a free throw. "Hey Kai, there's someone I want you to meet." "Hey man, I'm Jaden. Nice to meet you."
So, which of my videos have you seen?
Excuse me?
Holy shit, I'm gonna kill myself.
Oh,
so which of my videos have you seen?
Oh, I'm sorry, I haven't seen any, I don't think.
Ha! That's okay. Nice meeting you, bye!
Kai was super chill and nice about it, but oh my god, I wanted to rip my skin off.
I'm stuck in this cube with him until further notice, and it's all Ludwig's fault with his stupid dice! I hate it in here, let me out!
Oh, hi Jimmy. We were told to gather up in groups of five, designating one as a team captain who will have immunity for the next challenge. I was with James, Schlatt, Ludwig, and Charlie Moist Critical, using the dice to choose the captain. This time, I actually rolled highest, but reassigned it to Ludwig because I couldn't cope with the idea of possibly being responsible for a teammate's elimination. And then it was revealed captains would just have to assign their teammates a shape for the Squid Game Honeycomb Challenge.
Okay. Well, I definitely overthought that one.
I had triangle, James got circle, Charlie was star, and Schlatt unfortunately got umbrella. The 10-minute timer began, and everyone started deploying various different strategies to get their cookie shape out. Charlie used a new technique called huck as much spit as you can into the tin to dissolve it all. It was really gross. He ended up filling the tin almost to the top with spit. By the end, two people with stars were eliminated, and not a single umbrella made it through. Bye, Schlatt.
It was very funny seeing Mr. Beast lift the lid off Charlie's tin and immediately reel back in disgust, though.
A total of 14 out of 50 people have now been eliminated, leaving 36 people.
Honestly, that was good enough for me. Losing at any point going forward was already further than I was anticipating.
We were fed our little thing of rations and left to wait again. It probably doesn't seem like long in Mr. Beast's video, but it was like 9 p.m. by the time we began the second real challenge.
After being directed to choose a partner, James and I shook hands, ready to take on the next game as a team, and froze as it was revealed we had just chosen our own opponent. Another Squid Game tactic. I probably should have seen it coming, I just didn't expect the double up.
The Beast staff revealed the next challenge as they rolled in a giant Jenga tower. Winner stays, loser walks. Unfortunately, the very first game of giant Jenga between KSI and AJ ended up taking literally 2 hours. Doing the math in our heads, we all kinda figured we probably didn't have the time to play Jenga for the next 30 hours. But just as AJ won, KSI hoisted him over his shoulders and ran out of the cube.
No!
Huge drama!
Everyone was freaking out, AJ was stunned, no one knew what to do. Was that legal? Can you just carry people out of the cube? Jimmy had everyone take a vote, and pretty much everyone opted to bring AJ back in.
Yes, out of the kindness of our hearts, but also out of fear of being manhandled.
So since giant Jenga was a bust, production ended up scrambling to try and find like 12 sets of normal Jenga at midnight in North Carolina. A feat that seems impossible, but I feel like Jimmy could just call up the president of Jenga and have it all delivered via helicopter within 30 minutes. It took a bit, but the slightly larger than normal, yet still reasonably sized Jenga towers were all set up. As our game was going on, James and I ended up making a pact that whoever was eliminated would relay to the outside world that the other was okay, because we didn't have our phones, by the way. Our friends only knew we were in the Mr. Beast cube and haven't responded for 14 hours. Our game of Jenga was pretty intense. Eventually, it got to the point where as I was watching James pull out a final piece, I realized there wasn't any left for me to safely remove. I'm about to be eliminated. And a flash of bliss washed over me. Sure, I'll be gone, but that's okay. I'll be set free into the outside world again. The cube is harsh, unforgiving. It's taken so many of my friends from me. The glass floor is hurting my butt. I'm ready to go now. And deeper into the trenches I went. James being eliminated meant I was moving on to Cube Day 2. What a miracle. Watching the rest of the Jenga games was like watching an active war zone. People were focusing, cheering, sweating, praying. Towers were falling one after the other at the feet of now eliminated players. It was brutal. And also still taking way too damn long, man. Can I go to bed? The last game left to finish was between Quackity and a popular Brazilian creator, Enaldino. Apparently, when it was revealed the challenge was Jenga, Enaldino turned to Quackity and admitted he was a Jenga pro. Quackity had never played. Not the situation you want to be in. Quackity half-jokingly asked Enaldino if he wanted to play rock, paper, scissors instead, to which he replied, no. which, you know, fair. But 3 hours into this single game, the two of them were neck and neck. Genuinely the most cracked round of Jenga possibly ever. Everyone in the cube was gathered around watching Quackity slowly pulling out the very last piece in this skeleton of a Jenga tower. Just as he was about to make it, Enaldino asked, "Rock, paper, scissors?" Quackity looked up at him.
Muito tarde.
It was over. Enaldino tried to hang in there, but in the end, he fell. 18 people were now eliminated. All right, it's 3 a.m. Let's go to bed. I genuinely thought they would let us go back to our hotel rooms for the night, but... Man, now this is just great. I won myself a ticket to a night in the Mr. Beast Cube, sleeping next to a bunch of people I barely know, and I was probably just gonna get eliminated first thing in the morning anyway. As I was getting ready for bed, Kai walked by. Hey, I gotta check out your videos sometime. Oh, I'm sorry, man. I lost a bet to Ludwig and he made me say that. Oh, shit. Okay, damn. Oh, well, that makes falling asleep a bit easier. Thank God he only thought I had a huge ego for 19 hours straight. Crisis averted. In the morning, production had to prep for filming again, which meant they turned on every single light in the building, flash-banging all of us. They were turned off, and then these loud-ass brrrr sounds from construction started blasting. They turned the lights on again a few minutes later, but this time in a crazy strobe light effect for some reason. After breakfast rations, Jimmy returned, pointed to the entrance hallway, and in walks I Show Speed. With too much energy for a group of people that just had the weirdest sleep of their lives. Alright, you guys have the chance to vote Speed into the cube to join you in challenges. The kind thing to do was to let him in, but we all just survived trenches no one could even understand. We were trauma bonded together. And also, it wouldn't be fair. The majority of us moved to the voting side of no. Admittedly, me too. Mainly because I was a bit scared of him. Speed looked at Kai. At least shake my hand, man. You're gonna pull me out. As the two of them argued about a friendly handshake, Ludwig stepped up. I'll shake your hand, Speed. His hand now extended to Ludwig. The moment their hands touched, Speed started yanking Ludwig towards the outside world. We all started screaming and panicking. We couldn't lose one of our cute brothers like this. Ludwig was holding onto the support beam for dear life. Some of the guys managed to pull him back in, and as Speed walked out, unable to take any souls with him, he exclaimed, "This ain't the last time you're gonna see me, and I remember all y'all's faces." Alright, let's get started. Challenge 3 was Steal or No Steal. Basically, a modified version of Deal or No Deal. Some cases have the word safe in them, others say eliminated. One person looks inside a selected case, and the other decides whether they want to steal it or no steal it. And also, Howie Mandel was there.
Hi, Howie, big fan.
People started getting eliminated one by one, others securing safety. Eventually, Ludwig was up at the podium asking if anyone wanted to volunteer to go up. At this point, the ratio of safe cases was very high. 60% in favor of safe. Figuring the odds would just get messier from there, I volunteered. Ludwig looked inside his chosen case, looked up, and told me it was safe. I knew mathematically I should steal the case, but I've been burned by math before. As I started hesitantly saying I was gonna steal, Mr. Beast suddenly burst out saying Ludwig's heart rate was spiking. By the way, he was wearing a heart rate monitor, which made me scared it was actually an elimination case, and he was excited at the idea of avoiding going home. So last minute, I decided to let him keep the case. It was the safest play. If it said eliminated, then good, I dodged a bullet. If it was safe, then at least I'm not actually eliminated yet. I just have to play again. Shit. It was now my turn to bring someone up. Even though I didn't want to pick a friend out of fear of getting them eliminated, more than that, I didn't want to be up there with someone I didn't know. I picked Quackity. He came up to the podium. I grabbed case number 2. It says safe. My plan was to tell the truth, but in the most unconfident and nervous way possible. I was deploying every bit of body language knowledge I could think of, making myself look as guilty as possible as he asked me various questions. We went back and forth for a bit until your eyes looked down as you said the case was safe, which indicates guilt. So I think you're lying.
I'm not gonna steal it. Without a word, I shifted the case onto its back, unlatched it. Safe. It was worth sleeping in the cube! Oh my god, the relief, you have no idea. After everything finished, a bunch of people walked out, and unfortunately, Quackity ended up being one of them. 10 people left. I know it's a dog-eat-dog world inside the cube, but when you're left to sit with your fellow contestants for hours on end between challenges, waiting for Jimmy Beast to send you all through another round of cube stress, you really start bonding with the survivors. It was pretty sad watching them go. Hours passed until the Jimmy death bell struck again, and we were told to partner up once more. Alex and I had really gotten to chat and hang out together as the only girls left at this point, so we paired up. Everyone was blindfolded and told to sit tight until they were ready, which is ominous. The two of us were strategizing and figuring out each other's strengths and weaknesses for whatever was coming our way, only to be unblindfolded and see the entire cube transformed into a kitchen. It was a cooking battle. We're actually fucked. What? Alex started panicking, saying she can't cook for her life. We were freaking out. Then Mr. Beast brought out the judges. Professional competitive eater Joey Chestnut, Miranda Cosgrove, hi big fan, and Speed. Bottom two teams are eliminated. Time starts now. We ended up committing to mac and cheese with a slice of chocolate cake under the fancier title of American comfort food. AKA the only two women left in the challenge can't cook and they're trying their fucking best. The judges walked around to check in on everyone, and eventually Speed was at our station. So when you all were voting to let me in, which side were you on? Well, originally we were on the side of no, because we were a bit intimidated, but we ended up switching to a yes at the last minute. Right, Jaden?
Yeah, I switched.
Alright, cool. Because you know I don't forget, right?
Yep.
Later on during the challenge, Mac and Nolan from the Beast team came up to ask what we were making. At the time, I was grating up Beastables to sprinkle onto our cake for decoration, and I thought, oh, it would be funny to have them ask what we're making, and it's just their own brand of chocolate. So I was like, close your eyes and open your mouth, and gave Mac a piece of chocolate, and immediately without chewing, he was like, is this Beastables? And I was like, yeah. And he kind of stood there for a second with his mouth still open, and Nolan was like, oh, he's allergic. And they both had to leave. Oh my god, guys, I felt so bad. I apologized so much when he came back. Max said it was fine and is a good sport about it, but I still have so much guilt about being such an idiot. Ludwig and Amiksem presented first with their fried chicken and asparagus dish. The judges all really enjoyed it, giving them a total of 26 points, which is really unfortunate because I definitely thought Speed was gonna hold a bigger grudge against Ludwig and tank their score. We were up next, and thankfully, they really liked our food too. Joey was the first to score us, and ended up giving us a 10 out of 10. And in the moment, as a joke, I wanted to turn around and flip off Ludwig as a, like, friendly fake gloat, but I accidentally turned around and flipped off a Meeksum, and I felt so bad again. He was not the intended target, and now I was just being rude, and this challenge was going horribly. Not because of the cooking part, I've just been non-stop fumbling socially. We also got a total of 26, putting us at a tie with the French boys. But now, Logan Paul and Nick DiGiovanni were presenting. And I haven't mentioned it yet, but Nick is actually a goddamn chef. They even gave us all his own cookbooks as a helpful tip for the challenge, which is just a knife twist in my opinion. So yeah, they knocked it out of the park, got a 29. The judges were licking their plates. After them was Kai and AJ, who had a great presentation, but their food, not so much. They got a 16. After eating, Speed got up and started smashing the plates on the ground, and Logan Paul saw this and got really excited because he wanted to smash plates too. Without thinking, he ran out to join Speed, and we all shouted at him in panic. Confused at the sudden change in the air, Logan looked back at us before realizing he left the cube. To this day, none of us are truly sure if he did it for, like, the content or it was a genuine accident. In his defense, the set was so cosmetically different that it really did feel like we weren't in the cube anymore. Either way, he content created too close to the sun, and even though he had a guaranteed spot in the finals, he was eliminated. The last team of Rubius and Spriter went up with their Spanish tortilla, but turns out Spriter is a huge fan of Speed,
made, so he made a special Thai dessert just for him that the other judges weren't allowed to eat, which is honestly hilarious. We all held our breath as the judges flipped through their scores. 22. Alex and I made it to the finals. I never in my life thought I was gonna be getting this far, and suddenly realized I need to actually think about what I would do if I won. I went into this thing not even knowing if there was a prize at all, and was now facing the reality that I could win the whole thing. Hours passed as the five of us sat together in the cube until Mr. Beast emerged for the final time. Someone was about to win $1 million for their subscribers, and it all came down to this last challenge. Honestly, among the group, there wasn't a single person I thought didn't deserve to win. Everyone left were good people who all wanted to do something really positive with the money. It was great getting to know them all over the course of 2 cube days, and I was really proud to be standing next to them in the finals. 5 briefcases were piled in the center, one for each finalist. We were to each take one, peek inside our chosen case, and within the next 10 minutes, discuss who to vote out. If you're voted out and your briefcase is empty, you're eliminated. But if you're voted out and your case has $1 million inside, you win instantly. It was basically like reverse Among Us. The first round started, we all grabbed a case, peeked inside. Holy shit, I grabbed the $1 million case round one. I started shaking. I didn't know what strategy to use. I didn't know how to make myself look like I should be voted out. And during the discussion time, it definitely showed because I was really quiet and nervous the whole time. The 10-minute discussion wrapped up. We all unanimously wrote our votes down, and it fell into a tie between voting out Ludwig and somehow me. It could end right here. We had a few minutes to discuss again and recast votes, but Alex and Nick were able to figure out I voted for myself, so Ludwig was eliminated. The cases were reshuffled, we each grabbed one. I pulled it again. In that moment, I froze. Since I was in the hot seat last round, I was probably gonna fly pretty under the radar this time. Someone else is gonna be voted out, and I statistically will not see this case ever again. If I'm not voted out here, I basically lose. The second round began, and it was pretty much a blur from there. I was trying to talk more because being quiet last round got me found out, but was still flying too under the radar. Amidst trying to keep up with the conversation, strategize, and hold myself together, I couldn't find my win con. But with a few minutes left, Amixem said something that I think shifted the entire game. What are the odds Jaden pulled the $1 million case twice? There it was. Gambler's Fallacy, save me. Save me, Gambler's Fallacy. I couldn't mess this up. I don't know what to say to that one. Everyone's attention was now on me, and I could tell they were all thinking about what was just thrown into the ring. We all looked down at our papers. I wrote my name as quietly as possible, worrying the sound of the letters were gonna out me. Jimmy read them all out. Jaden. Alex. Jaden. Jaden. They voted me out. I slowly walked to the middle of the podium with my briefcase. In that moment, I was the only one who knew what had just happened. Everyone leaned in as I unlatched the case and revealed the $1 million. I won! Confetti cannons blasted. Everyone immediately started congratulating me. All the eliminated contestants left in the green room ran out screaming and jumping around me in celebration. I started to tear up for some stupid emotional reason. So, yeah, I won $1 million to give away to my subscribers. That is a Looney Tunes amount of money. First of all, top five all agreed that whoever won the $1 million would give the other four 100K each to do something for their subscribers too. So a total of 400K will be going to Ludwig, Alex Botez, Amixem, and Nick DiGiovanni. With the remaining 600K, I decided to put it towards paying for as many people's art degrees as possible. It's really scary going into the art field right now between the animation industry hitting their rough patches, AI threatening to take artist jobs. The overall career path is extremely intimidating and difficult to break into. I'd really like to encourage and make it easier for some of the up-and-coming artists by being able to send them through art school stress-free. I have no idea how to set it all up, but I'm currently working with as many qualified people as I have available to me to make it happen. As my and Mr. Beast's team figures it out, I'll keep you all updated through my Twitter. We'll get it sorted. I entered the Mr. Beast Cube ready to just talk to my friends and screw up in the first challenge, but instead I was isolated from the world for 48 hours, watched my peers fall one by one in front of me, and left with $1 million for my subscribers. Thank you, Carl, for inviting me. Thank you to all my friends who made the cube so much more enjoyable. Thank you, Mr. Beast, for creating this incredible opportunity I can now use to support artists. Despite being put through cube trenches, I had a really great time. And of course, huge thanks to the Beast crew for making it all happen. It was something I'll never forget or experience ever again. Hopefully. Some of you may have heard, but a while back, Jacob and their team created a little something called Pokemon Too Many Types. It's just a normal game of Pokemon Emerald, but you might notice some things are just a little bit different. Everyone has talked about how chaotically fun this game is, and I finally found the time to play it myself. Let me tell you, everyone was right. This was the most insane, backwards, chaotic playthrough of Pokemon I've had in quite some time. Professor Birch is being mauled by a dog in the grass right outside my house for the millionth time, and after digging around in his stuff, I helped myself to a Popplio. But not just any Popplio, for you see, this one is silly. Obviously, I blast the Angiputchiana to smithereens, and with that, have now earned the freedom to explore the world on my own. Yep, it's dawning on me that I have no idea how anything works anymore. Trainers had all these new Pokemon, they're pulling out moves I've never seen before, types don't line up the way I'm familiar with. It genuinely felt like I was playing Pokemon for the very first time again. Weasel is water fluffy, Snom is ice bean, Machop is fighting stinky. Popplio, give that thing a shower, it reeks. Oh, that's super effective. I suppose that makes a lot of sense. Going into this game, I decided not to look at the type chart at all, which by the way looks like this. I'm gonna have to unfortunately use my brain and logic to figure out how to win every single battle until I'm the champion, which may be a bit trickier than you would even guess. For example, this Impidimp. He has now been turned into a dark gamer Uno reverse type. Naturally. I figured Gamer might work similarly to the Stinky type and be weak to water. That makes sense, right? Alright, well, look, I didn't make the game, alright guys? I'm just figuring out the riddles. However,
let's see what Gamer has to say against water type. Take a shower. What? It's got... What?
So here's the logic you gotta think about. Not only is it a Gamer type, it is an Uno reverse gamer type.
Oh.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, as much as I might think I know how things would work, you're gonna witness that it doesn't always pan out the way it seems. I scooped myself up a Krabby, which, as you can see, is no longer water type, and entered the Rustboro Forest only to be challenged by a Team Aqua Grunt with a single Snorunt. I wasn't worried until I realized the hard way that despite its silliness, Popplio still doesn't like grass, and crabs don't mix well with ice. Wiping this early in a Pokemon game is genuinely so humbling, and I don't like it at all. Honestly, I didn't even want to tell you that it happened in the first place, but we run it back because this isn't a Nuzlocke, and my little pets are perfectly healthy after being dunked on. This time, we send the Grunt hightailing it back into the bushes. Despite feeling dumb and stupid and pathetic for wiping to a level 9 Team Aqua Grunt with one Pokemon, I waltzed into the first gym with my chest out like I earned being there. As most of you know, Roxanne is typically a rock-type trainer, but she's now studied the ways of the ancient-type Pokemon, which I didn't think would be much different until she completely steamrolled me.
Oh, shit. I got Doggy, but Doggy isn't gonna do too much here. God damn it. Waste of a turn. No! Well,
Her Laleep is crazy. Sus ancient grass type? How was I supposed to predict that one? What even is that? Now aware of the threat she had in her back pocket, I was able to navigate the rematch with Krabby the Fossil Killer, earning us our very first gym badge. Also, Geodude is boring ugly rock. I just wanted to share that one with the room. We took a nice boat ride over to Dewford, where we got to meet lots of new friends in the local cave, like Clink, the Prime Steel Guys, and Sableye, the Gamer, who has a little bit of an Easter egg attached to it.
Someone just pointed something out. Okay, will you trade?
Oh my god.
Will you move? Yep.
Oh, shit.
You see the acronym right there.
After saying hi and bye to Steven, doing who knows what all alone with his cave rocks, we headed off to challenge Brawly. I opened the gym doors and was immediately hit with a wall of pure disgusting stench. Trying not to physically decay, we crawled through the gym's maze and were met by Stinkmaster Brawly and his smelly ass team. Krabby knocked his Mankey out cold, but Sock came out and started overwhelming my Pokemon one after the other.
Get so much knowledge. Oh my god.
Like, why wouldn't it be?
So you can imagine, I am not happy that this stupid thing is sweeping my team right now. Luckily, the Vulpix I caught earlier was able to tank its hits with its new fluffy type, and together with our own little stinker of a Stunky, we were able to finish the fight. I snatched that badge from Brawly's greasy hand and basically swam to Slateport myself to wash the fumes off my clothes. To dissociate that disgusting experience away, I went and caught myself a new friend. A ground friend, to be specific, as well as a little fluffy Stuffle. We also got to kick out Team Aqua, who was holding the poor Slateport Museum lady hostage with a gun. Thank God they were only armed with a harmless water gun horsey, because I do not want to know what dealing with an actual threatening gun-type Pokemon would even look like. Battling more trainers on the route up to Mauville got me back into the mood to take on the third gym, so I shoved Wally out of the way and headed up to Watson. Things started off normal, but quickly spiraled out of control because after Sableye beat up his Porygon, Watson immediately brought out his ace. You know, his famous star Pokemon, Whimsicott. And this thing just starts spamming its new move called Hype Train. Yep, Watson specializes in prime type Pokemon, which would definitely be a funny little hint hint nudge nudge if I was streaming this on Twitch. But alas, here we are. Unfortunately, one cannot gift prime subs to a YouTube channel. Sadly, all you can do is click the subscribe button. Isn't that just a shame? Well, whether you click the button or not, I got wrecked by this cotton ball. Hype Train works the same as Rollout, where each consecutive use gets stronger and stronger, and this Whimsicott must have had some sort of aimbot on, because it didn't miss a single one. It literally demolished my team the second it stepped onto the battlefield. I was also a bit unprepared and forgot to level everyone up, so let's just forget that fight even happened. Like, it wasn't even fair, so it doesn't count. Round 2 was where the real action was. This battle was much more neck and neck. Knowing what Watson's tactics were going into the fight, I was able to play around it much more easily. Jaden doesn't fall for the same charade more than one time. I'm like an AI learning machine, alright? I never lose the same fight don't look at that. With Watson defeated, I was now one step closer to becoming the strongest trainer in all of this topsy-turvy Hoenn. I caught myself a Honedge, Swablu, and Skarmory while scaling the mountain, and even had time to smack the Team Magma nerds around while heading to Lava Ridge. To avoid another embarrassing underleveled situation, I got everyone up to Flannery's level cap for a nice, clean, fair fight.
That's like, I think the thing that is hardest for me, reading comprehension. I think that's what I've decided. My god!
Oh wow.
My crabs! Buddy! Holy shit!
Yeah.
What is the downside of this mystic fire? I'm just so weak to fire. And warm hugs. Do I have to wipe to every gym? Flannery.
She's mean.
I don't know what that Ninetales is eating, but that thing is not normal. After changing absolutely nothing about my strategy and just running back into the gym directly from the Pokemon Center, I demanded a rematch. Like, her team of fluffy Pokemon aren't that tough. I just wasn't ready to be paralyzed and incinerated the whole fight by her puppies and kitties and that roided up monster of a Ninetales. This time, Kingler and Sandslash were able to double team Flannery's fluffy team with much more ease, earning us the heat badge. With half the gyms now defeated, it was finally time to deal with some long overdue family matters. It's well known that our father Norman abandoned our home to be a gym leader in Petalburg, leaving me and Mom back at the house alone. Little Root has like 5 people living in it, and one of them's a huge nerd. That's like a social death sentence for a growing child, and I am filled with a burning desire for justice. After all this time, all those days of having nothing to do but watch Birch go into the same stupid patch of grass and get mauled by the same stupid dog over and over and over, I get to walk into Norman's gym and challenge him as an equal. Whatever reasoning he had to leave us is gonna be revealed in our battle. And it better be good. I walked through the doors. The air was weird and tense. Each trainer I battled looked at me like they already knew exactly who I was and shifted their glance away out of embarrassment? Shame? What is going on here? Not even the helpful gym guy had anything to say to me. He wouldn't even tell me the type theme of the gym. I burst through those final doors to find Norman looking out his windows at the horizon. He's been waiting for me.
Are you ready to fight Norman and his very fun and normal gym? Have you not picked up on it yet?
I haven't picked up on anything.
Say, just keep going.
What is he gonna do? What Pokemon do he have? Floatzel? Okay. I don't get it. What is this riddle?
I'm just watching.
Glomp? Is it because he's only using attacks that are cute and family-like?
No.
Lopunny? He can't be a fluffy trainer. That was what Flannery was. Puddle Slam. No, fluffy furry. He said, is he a furry trainer?
Yes.
Norman.
Can't a man have hobbies?
Norman.
Look, there's nothing wrong with being a furry. Many of my friends are furries, but to abandon your family to selfishly pursue your passion for Lucarios and Vaporeons and Lopunnies. Norman, how could you? You tore our family apart. And for what? Glomps and colon threes? Admittedly, his team was too strong for me. The bond he shared with those Pokemon was unlike anything I've seen yet, and I was gonna have to go back to the drawing board if I was ever gonna defeat a divorced man and his beloved furries. I switched around some of my Pokemon, headed back in, and again began the onslaught of devastating glomps and cuddle slams, weaving through paralyzing warm hugs and even the occasional cute charm. Eventually, it came down to our last Pokemon.
Okay. Slash. No! Shadow Sneak, please.
You have a chance here.
Please. Yes!
Now that my furry father has been vanquished, I was filled with an overwhelming energy and drive. It was like I unlocked a version of myself that was capable of defeating anyone and everything in front of me. I beat up all of Team Aqua that was infiltrating the Weather Institute, cleared Winona's song and dance gym without breaking a sweat. Maxi stole the blue orb to awaken Groudon like an idiot, so I had to teach him a lesson. Again.
You're gonna use the wrong orb, idiot. Why do you think the blue orb would be good for Groudon? He hates blue!
Team Aqua Rats did the exact same thing, so I had to do the exact same thing to them. I was on a roll. It felt like I was back in my element, finally familiar with the types, and was absolutely thriving. We pulled up to Tate and Liza's gym, ready to let nothing slow us down, except it looks like they specialize in a type I hadn't seen up until this point. Space. Well, time to slow down. Since I didn't have anything that could really handle space Pokemon, I went and caught myself a Bouffalon, because everyone knows Ohio type is good against space. I mean, come on. As well as prepared Sandslash and Stunky for the fight. I wasn't too confident, but made my way to the gym leader's room to find Clay. Where's Tate and Liza? Aren't you supposed to be in Unova? I wasn't anticipating this, but I guess I should just start expecting the unexpected from this game.
It's a double... Okay, it's still a double battle. 41. Oh, we lose. We definitely lose. Gunta, this isn't space. Wait, what the f*** is going on here? I don't know what's good against gun. That is song. Sure, we'll do that. Shoot! What the? He just shot my Goyle. He shot my guy again. That's so much damage for not very effective. We'll do that. Oh, he's dead. He's just so dead. Bare arms? Oh my god. What is this? Dude, this guy's fighting me with the Constitution.
So this isn't actually a space-type gym like I was originally led to believe. This is, in fact, a gun gym, and I am being blasted to Kingdom Come by Mr. Red, White, and Blue over here. I failed to expect this level of unexpected, but how could I? We switched around my team again, this time for a high noon duel battle, headed back in, but honestly, it wasn't looking that great on attempt two of fighting a man with assault weapons.
And air cutter again.
No! No! Take it, boys! Take it! Ah! Stop! How can you do this?
Oh, there's nothing I can do about it! There's f***ing nothing. This fight sucks balls. Whatever.
I genuinely think this Clay fight was the most out of left field, chaotic, flabbergasting Pokemon battle I've gone through in my entire career as a Pokemon player. I don't think anything Pokemon could create would ever elicit the kind of shock and despair I felt fighting Clay, the Driftvale gym leader, in my Pokemon Emerald game.
Okay, I don't think this is enough. Yeah, I just... Oh, he went against Ari. That's so lucky. Oh? Is this it? Yes! Clay, you rootin' tootin' f***ing asshole. I'm not talking to you. I'm not talking to you. Get me out of here.
I basically crawl out the gym with my badge like I just got out of a fight with Wile E. Coyote, because I basically did, and... Now I gotta go deal with whatever commotion Team Magma is creating in the space station. Withered and tired, I walk up the stairs to Maxi and Steven arguing about God knows what at this point. Girls, I'm gonna give it to you straight. I'm having a bit of a day. We all know we're just gonna hash this out in a battle, so let's just cut the chit-chat. Steven, get your ass over here. And after all of what I just went through, you guys are not going to believe what Steven put me through in that cursed space center. Yeah, so the first fight, I went into it unprepared because I didn't know the team Maxi and Friend were packing. So that was a bit of an unfortunate disadvantage. It's all right, we run it back. But this is where things go drastically downhill.
Hyper voice. Steven, you're just leaving me in the trenches? Why even try at this point? Thunder? Oh my fucking god, Steven, you idiot. Why do they only go against me? Why do they only go against me? Steven, you are the fucking Elite Four champion of Hoenn. Don't use Thunder on Aggron. It doesn't... In no world is it ever good. I swear to God, Steven. You're actually joking.
Steven, you're my guy. I've always had your back. I've been Team Steven since day one. But what in the world was that? This is not the playstyle of the region champion, buddy. Get up! Don't talk to me. I need some air. To blow off some much-needed steam, I infiltrated Team Aqua's hideout because Archie apparently didn't get the memo of my threat of a Knuckle Sandwich if he ever tried to use red on blue Kyogre. Knuckle Sandwich is delivered, but unfortunately, too late. Kyogre is already halfway across the Pacific Ocean to go drown Groudon. Can any of you adults do anything right? Hello? Earth to Archie's brain. It's hollow! I scaled the sky tower to wake up Rayquaza and rat on the siblings duking it out in the middle of Sootopolis. Off he flew, and after a bit of non-gentle parenting, the two slinked back in their rooms in shame. Yay! Land and sea across the globe are safe once again. If I catch your asses playing with these f***ing orbs again, I swear. Even though it was the eighth and final gym before taking on the Elite Four, Juan wasn't an issue. For some competitors, he could have been difficult because he actually ran a full-on crab team. Very intimidating. But I've also got a crab. And my crab is stronger than his crabs. So we won. After all I've gone through, this was the hardest I've had to claw my way to the Elite Four in a long time. But that just means victory is gonna taste oh so much sweeter. I entered Victory Road, anticipating an easy dungeon clear, but from the shadows emerged Wally. I've beaten you before, I can beat you again. Holy mother! Okay, maybe that one was a bit of a fluke. I wasn't ready. This time, we'll... Turns out, Wally's tough. I didn't expect it, but he really is. This made me realize I'm not prepared for everything with my current roster of Pokemon, and if I'm gonna become the champion, I need to make some big changes. I've been swapping around my team pretty casually over the course of my adventure, but after locking in, I decided on this as my final roster. Primarina, Kingler, Aegislash, Beware, and two new members of Darmanitan the Angy Fire Monkey, and Duraludon the, you guessed it, gun. Look, I've seen the power of being able to pull up with a gun. I think I'm gonna need that in the fights that are ahead of me. With these changes, I was able to rematch Wally and take home the win this time. This is it. These guys are my team, and they're the ones I'm gonna become the best with. While doing some final training before the Elite Four, there was just a little tiny, unexpected hiccup along the way.
What was that? Oh my, Freddy, you would never. He would never.
You have to teach it to him.
I'll get rid of Earthquake for Bite of 87. Five Nights? What? What is... What the f-
It's Paris song.
Oh my, Freddy, what am I turning into? You're not like this, Freddy.
For those of you who are unaware, Five Nights is basically an unhinged version of Paris song, where after five turns, both Pokemon on the battlefield are hit by a 250 base power attack. And Bite of 87 is straight up a brand new one-hit KO move, where if you get bit, you die instantly. But there's only a 30% chance of it actually connecting. High risk, high reward type move. Equipped with a plethora of new threatening moves and mons, my team was now prepared for the final gauntlet. I flashed my badges to the guards and took a step into Sydney's domain. I like that look you're giving me. Let's have a good match. As someone once taught me, you gotta be prepared for the gun. Phoebe was up next with her gamer Pokemon, and even though I was able to take down her team with my loaded Duraludon and shower-giving Primarina, the highlight of the fight was when she brought out a Freddy Fazbear of her own.
Huge win. Beware? Oh, it's Freddy v. Freddy here. It's gotta be Freddy v. Freddy. And you know what Freddy does.
Oh, he got the first one! He got it!
That's my f***ing Freddy right there. Doesn't miss. He hits that frontal lobe every f***ing time.
I walked into Glacia's room. Larry. The third fight was against Larry, who normally is a gym leader and Elite Four member in Paldea, but looks like he also works for Hoenn. Jeez, man. Three full-time jobs? That cannot be legal. You gotta talk to HR. He led with a golem that only knew stealth rocks and explosion, which is chaotically hilarious. But right after that, he sent out a wall of a slacking that took out my Duraludon, Primarina, and Aegislash. Finally, Kingler was able to knock it out after pulling off a few dragon dances. Sorry, crab raves. Since I basically had a crab bazooka on my hands, Kingler just swept him from there. After the Larry jump scare, I didn't even know what to expect for the final member. It could genuinely be anyone. Cynthia? Red? Clay Butt again?
What? No! You're joking! He's in the f***ing vent. No, wait, I'm facing the wrong way.
I didn't know that's what happened when you clicked the vent from that side. I'll be honest.
Not only was I flashed for simply going about my E4 challenge, but Elite Four Sussy Baka and his sus team went dummy mode on me.
I'm scared, so I shoot. Oh, no. Wait, this isn't good. This thing's gotta go. No, he's faster! He's dead. What? I thought... No! Where is he? Ooh, nice crit. No, they all vent! Stop venting.
Well, now I get to get another crab rave.
I do. No! He avoided it! No, Krabby, I'm sorry! Ah!
I was not anticipating a battle where their whole strategy was to hide in vents scattered all over the room, and when they popped out, they hit like trucks. Not even my Five Knights attack could hit them in the vents, which meant I was just getting my own mons attacked by animatronics. Admittedly, we were vaporized. But shut up! There's nothing in the rules about trying again. It's not a Nuzlocke. I refused to call it there because I will not let my legacy end with... Hey, see that girl? She was on her way to become the next Hoenn champion. But she couldn't get past Elite Four member Sussy Baka. Poor thing. The second battle went much better because not only was I able to play around all the venting, but halfway through the fight, Kingler finally learned a better crab move. This whole time, I was being forced to use 50 base power vice grip, but now that we've got 100 base power crab hammer, it was lights out for these imposters. And with that, it was time. All that stood left in front of me was the champion. Wallace. Which makes sense because Steven was definitely fired after that maxi fight. Out came his first Pokemon, which was a simple Why Not. Now let me explain something here, because this thing is far more threatening than you could ever believe. This game has introduced so many new types into the world of Pokemon. Many of them are extremely powerful, but there's one type that reigns amongst them all, the absolute worst. And that's Baby type. It's pretty self-explanatory which Pokemon fall under the baby category. Igglybuff, Cleffa, Budu, Bonsly. Literally the baby Pokemon. You know what this type is weak to? Literally like all of them. Think about it. If you hit a baby with anything, they're gonna be taking damage. It's a baby. So now you're probably thinking, okay, so why does the final boss of Hoenn lead with Why Not the baby type? It's also Uno reverse. That's right, every single type effectiveness against this thing is now flipped. It's a defensive monster, just waiting to counter and mirror coat your whole team to death for simply breathing on it too hard. I was genuinely so scared of this thing, I dragon-tailed it out of there. That's a nightmare for another time. His Latias got dragged out, which is crazy to say I was relieved to see compared to that masochist of a Why Not, but of course, it's still a Latias, so it takes out my Duraludon with a single Thunderbolt. Kingler comes out to finish it off, so next came Silvally, which I'll just let you watch how this one played out.
I don't think I'd get past this thing. What even is this type? Type Emerald?
He's a type.
Type. I don't even know what that is, but it's gotta be weak to Monkey.
So type is more of a modifier than anything. It just doubles all type interactions.
Oh, shit. So okay, so I die here. What?
So here's a little glitch. Sometimes, let's say the max damage you can deal is 999. If the game registers you as doing more, it overflows into 1 HP.
So, this is... Darmanicantan died and came back to life, basically.
Pretty much, yeah.
Well, that gives us enough time to banana blitz again. Yeah!
We take those, alright? Nope, I don't want to hear it. We take those. The next chunk of the battle plays out pretty normally. Wallace did have some pretty scary Pokemon, including Steven's Metagross, he very likely lost custody of, until I was face to face with this stupid little bomb again. It tried everything it could to bait my Aegislash into attacking it, but we stayed patient. I knew I had a single shot at this, so Aegislash charged up as many swords dances as it could muster before slicing that thing to the moon. A final beast entered the ring. A true abomination called Sans Shedinja. This is the only Pokemon in the Dex with the Sands type, and it can only be touched by a very small selection of types. A tried and true nightmare. Unfortunately for you, Wallace, I've played the genocide route of Undertale. I know exactly what it's gonna take to bury this thing for good. And he's right here! It's a beautiful day, Sans Shedinja, but insects like you should be burning in hell! I did it. The strongest Pokemon trainer in this wacky world of Hoenn is me. It took so much more than I thought it would to be here. Way more humiliating wipes than I'd like to admit. I lost a lot of battles, but shut up, you try playing it then. With the power of friendship, logic, determination, and maybe just a little bit of love, we've beaten Pokemon too many types.
Genshin Impact needs no introduction. It's taken the gaming sphere by storm since being published in 2020, is enjoyed by millions of players all over the globe, and even if you've never played Genshin Impact before, you've definitely heard about it. Up until this video, I was in the heard about it but didn't know anything about it category. Not for any particular reason, I kinda just don't do anything ever. I don't know why, I should probably figure that out, it might be a therapy thing. As I was sitting on the floor, barely existing one day, Genshin Impact themselves suddenly reached out. Hi, Jaden. I see you're up to your usual nothingness. How about we pay you to play Genshin Impact? Okay, so yep, this video is surprisingly sponsored by Genshin Impact. My first sponsor on this channel. Wow, are you proud of me, parents? No, please don't go. I'm being paid to play Genshin Impact, but it's still gonna be a good video and experience. Here, watch, I'll prove it. I'm talking to Paimon, my spirit companion that I see all over my Twitter feed, about my past. Yeah, I was literally just minding my business traveling from world to world with my sister, when all of a sudden some sustainer of heavenly principles goddess appeared, absorbed my sister with cubes, and chained me to this land. Biggest hater I've ever seen. Yeah, that's crazy. Anyway, thanks for saving me from drowning in the ocean. As we walk and talk, a bunch of little critters are scurrying around. Of course, I was scooping up all of them. The ecosystem was definitely starting to crumble with me on this planet now, I'll tell you that much. Let nature flourish? Nah, it's all going into my inventory. To live is to hoard. As I'm chasing a squirrel around the lush forest, we discover a mysterious statue in the middle of a glistening pond. Oh, hello, great wind god. Maybe this isn't the time to have 12 lizards stuffed in my pockets. I'm suddenly granted mystical powers by the statue, and can now see the map. The city of Mondstadt is close by, so we decided to head over there to see if anyone knows anything about my lost sister. But while walking, we ended up stumbling into a strange bard talking to a dragon. That's
not my sister. Unfortunately for everyone, I have a little magic hiccup, which gets us caught, and both the bard and dragon scatter. Closer to Mondstadt, we run into Amber, a knight who warns us that a dragon called Storm Terror, an awesome name, has been terrorizing the town lately. She then joins our party to lead us to safety, which is crazy because I thought you had to spend money to get girls to join your party in this game, but this one just joined us for free. In Mondstadt, Amber then gives us a wind glider. Woo! Flying! I take a running leap off the side of a building to try out my new wings when suddenly the dragon shows up and spawns a bunch of tornadoes all over the town, catapulting me into the air. With a full view of the dragon, I do what any sane person would in that scenario. Storm Terror ends up fleeing, and as a reward for shooing him off, I'm introduced to basically the protectors of Mondstadt. I'm Jean, the acting Grand Master of the Knights of Favonius. Kaya. Very impressive going up against a dragon. You're hot. They take me to various temples, crushing these dragon's breath crystals that apparently gave Storm Terror power. I was just happy to be smashing rocks, though, and some random moth guy that probably has significance but he's dead now, so. As the group was talking amongst each other about important stuff like what to do next to ensure the safety of the townspeople, I wandered off and kind of started doing my own thing. Helped some people, did some cooking, fought for my life against some hyper-aggressive and pissed animal hypostasis Rubik's Cube boss named Beth I accidentally stumbled into, which definitely didn't take me way too long to defeat. Fed some ducks. I then found the bard from earlier doing a guitar solo for the town. He introduces himself as Venti and tells about how him and Storm Terror, whose real name is Dvalin, used to be friendly before it was attacked and poisoned by another dragon, leaving him bitter and angry. Venti essentially says, I can fix him. Do you want to commit a burglary with me? Yes. With a freshly stolen holy lyre, we were able to summon Dvalin, who pulled a bit of a tsundere and was like, if you really cared about me, then you'd come to my castle. But you probably won't because you hate me, don't you? You hate me and want me dead. I just can't do anything right. No! Dvalin, come back! Listen to this sick riff I made. Bada bing, bada boom, we entered his lair and started fighting him in a swirling vortex. No, take your time. The dragon eventually falls, we purify him, and the day is saved. Yippee! Happy dragon, happy Mondstadt, happy... Wait, I was supposed to find my sister, not fight a dragon. Even though I'm riding the high of saving all these people and a dragon and being awesome, I head off to Fontaine to continue my journey. The town sits on the edge of a cliff, sparkling waterfalls pouring off the sides around it, framed perfectly by the mountains behind. Wow, what a beautiful town. Is that girl about to jump off the cliff? The water will rise and eventually drown everyone here, leaving our Hydro Archon to sit weeping on her throne for all eternity. Hi, twin sister! Oh, sorry, did I interrupt you talking about the prophecy where everyone in Fontaine is born within sin and one day we will all dissolve in the waters? That's a classic. Come see our magic show. The magic twins, Linny and Lynette, decide to take us to the opera house. But on the way there, we're actually stopped by the Hydro Archon herself, Farina. Welcome, travelers, to my city of Fontaine. Everyone, give them a warm welcome. They're fierce and noble warriors who have done much good for the land and its people. Hey, thanks. It's really nothing. We just tamed a giant dragon. Actually, I hereby declare the traveler under arrest for having a flying object, which is illegal. What? She's not even... Paimon doesn't count because she's a balloon. Yeah, Paimon's my balloon. Ha! All right, that's funny. Case dismissed. Later. So, can we ride the Aquabus? Yippee! We get to the opera house and the magic show begins. Everything is going well, but as Linny was about to do a trick where he swaps boxes with a random audience member, a giant water tank falls onto the box, obliterating it. Oh my god, we killed my assistant Cowell? Why is he here and not the audience member? Speaking of which, where is she? A murder mystery plus disappearance case was now in place, with everyone looking at Linny as the prime suspect. Dude, this is getting good.
A man died. Everyone starts trying to be a hero and chime in on the court case where some guy died in quite possibly one of the most Looney Tune ways possible. But I can't really be bothered at this point and go outside to jump into the ocean. Using my new diving skills, I was able to explore the whole world the water had to offer. I was actually shocked when I first saw it because of how gorgeous it was. I don't know why the people of Fontaine are scared of these waters. It's awesome down here. It's because they die. After just swimming around and finding little secrets and treasures, I decided it was time to start fighting the fish. Yep, it was time to square up. Fish have had it too good for too long. Hold this uppercut. Eventually, everyone yanked me out of the water and dragged me back to the opera house to act as Linny's defense lawyer, even though I have no credentials and literally saw him squash a guy with a fish tank. Linny couldn't have killed Cowell because... Cowell killed Cowell! Dude, she's right! What?! Everyone is freaking out at this point because somehow Cowell actually was the murderer and had a secret plan to dissolve people in water. I don't know, it was a lot of adults talking in big words. I was just thinking about punching fish the whole time. Next thing I know, people are shaking my hand and congratulating me on a case closed. Even Farina is like, excellent job, Jaden. You're a funny one. Thank you, Farina. Even though you've been trying to take me to court and put me in jail for your own entertainment, you're also a funny one. I hope your people don't drown. With that, the trial is adjourned and I'm released from my forced upon lawyer duties, left to finally explore the world to my heart's content. There's so many more quests and stories to uncover in the game, also a lot of lore, so if you're a big theory head, proceed at your own risk. I enjoyed the time I spent playing Genshin Impact and was surprised at how beautiful the visuals and music are. It's overall just a well-developed game that's pretty to look at. I got immersed in the world and spent hours exploring to find little secrets and bosses and treasures. Thank you again to Genshin Impact for reaching out and sponsoring this video because I had a great time learning about the universe you all created. If you're interested in playing the open world action RPG game that is Genshin Impact yourself, then ladies and gentlemen, if you would please look under your seats, you'll find... I meant to say the description of this video. If you look in the description, you can click the link to download it for free. Yep, I said it already, but I'm saying it again. Genshin Impact is free to download. You can have zero money in your bank account and still get to play it. As long as you have at least a PC, mobile device, PS4, or PS5 to play the game on in the first place. In battle, you control elements like Kairo, Dendro, Pyro, Hydro, Anemo, Electro, Geo, and when combined strategically, you can deal devastating elemental damage to your opponent. By the way, if you think you've spoiled the game's story for yourself by watching this video, you've never been more wrong in your life. There's so many more towns, quests, stories. Don't worry, trust me, there's plenty left for you to explore. As someone that wants to 100% the games I play as much as possible, I feared for my mind, body, and soul when I realized how much content there was waiting for me. Genshin Impact actually just released a new 4.2 update that includes new characters and even an entirely new storyline for Fontaine. There's a bunch of new events that let you play different kinds of minigames to win rewards. You got to meet her a little bit in the video already, but Farina is a huge new character in this update as you continue the next part of the Archon stories. Fontaine as a whole is also expanding by introducing new environments, boss ascension materials, and local specialties for Farina. It's an ever-changing and growing game that has a lot of passion put into it, and if any of this sounds up your alley, why not give it a try? I mean, the link's right there. Might as well just click it. Hey guys, I know it's been a while since I've had a story to tell, but I have a story to tell, and it's because my birds accidentally laid eggs together without my consent. Okay, so let's back up. I'm sure the majority of you know this guy right here, Ari. Classic piece in the Jaden Animations lore. If you don't know him, you don't know me. I keep Ari in his own room because he destroys literally anything if he has access to it. In a way, you could call it a containment room. But when I'm not around to give him attention, I wanted to make sure he has a friend around and isn't just sitting there all alone and pitiful-like. So back in October 2019, I got Tofu, which, oh my god, I'm just realizing is much longer ago than I thought. Tofu, I thought you were still just a baby. She definitely isn't as well known as Ari, but
We're talking about her now. I was so nervous back when Tofu first arrived because I obviously hadn't gotten any other pets before, and it was really important that she and Ari actually got along. Birds can be pretty particular, and some just flat out hate each other for no apparent reason. Some sort of bird drama or something, I don't know. I was worried my birds were gonna mean girls each other, and then suddenly I'd have two singular birds, which then doubles my original problem. I went through the typical process you're supposed to do to introduce them, keep them in separate areas for a bit, let them kinda see each other, slowly introduce them in small doses, and suddenly they were best friends. I was so happy. Plan B of having to get four birds was now not necessary. So great, everything was going according to plan. I have two birds that can keep each other company when I'm not around. Nothing could possibly go wrong when there's a pair of animals that get along very well. It was a peaceful, happy 3 years of two birds who were besties until this past spring where everything went wrong. How could this happen? I walked into the birds' room to give them their morning food, and on their dresser, I find three tiny little eggs. Oh. And by the way, when I say tiny, I mean you would be shocked to see how small bird eggs can be. These things were the size of a quarter. Some of you may be thinking, Jaden, why is this a bad thing? Jaden, it's the gift of life. This is a beautiful moment of miracles. Okay, sure, but actually, no. First of all, I don't want more birds. Especially fragile little fresh out the egg ones. Remember when I was worried I'd have to get four birds if Ari and Tofu didn't like each other? Why am I experiencing the same dilemma again? Two birds is already enough, especially since one of them has devoted his entire life to being a full-time bastard. Anyone who has a gremlin pet understands that that creature is equal to like three pets worth of energy. It's a lot to handle at all times, and if my plate gets any more full, I'll unlock alcoholism. Second of all, this is now my problem that I need to handle ASAP. I can't be like, oh, I'm busy right now, I'll deal with it later. No, procrastinating would only lead to possible hatching. Not 100%, but there's a chance, I'll get to that later. Which leads back to my prior statement that I've stated multiple times at this point of I don't want more birds. Immediately, I was like, how did this happen? I've been preventing them from laying eggs together for so long. What changed? Unlike cats and dogs, birds can't really be neutered, at least not easily. You could give them like monthly hormone shots or there's other stuff, but it's just really complicated. And you're better off simply making sure their environment is set up in a way to discourage nesting and egg laying behavior. There's a few things you could do to prevent it, but to sum things up, basically, don't let the birds nest. If they find a dark little hidey hole, they'll start treating it like a nest and get hormonal, and suddenly you've got eggs. No nesting, for the most part, no problem. I looked around the room and was so confused. All they had in there were their cages, climbing tree, and a drawer I bought to hold all their bird stuff. And the eggs were just on the top of the drawer too, not even in a safe, burrowed, nest-like place. One had already rolled off the side and cracked open on the floor like an omelet. Tofu, this is not even close to motherly instincts. After a bit of snooping around, I pulled the drawer back from the wall to realize, oh my god, these birds have been secretly burrowing into the back of this drawer like they were plotting a prison escape. Somehow, Ari and Tofu squeezed their tiny bodies in between the drawer and the wall and started chewing the back of it to get into the drawers from behind. They literally gnawed through it like the nematodes in SpongeBob. You should have seen all the sawdust on the floor. Well, here's a picture, but it doesn't do it justice. It looked like a construction site and smelled like Home Depot. Suddenly, it made sense. They were using the drawer as a secret nest. Whenever I was in the room, they were out and about. Hi, Mom, please give us seeds. Nothing nefarious is going on. I leave, and boom, straight to the forbidden nesting drawer they go. Criminals. As I'm connecting the dots on how we got to this point, I realized I don't even know which one of these knuckleheads even laid the eggs. When I got Tofu, I made sure she was a girl. A little lady. I talked to one of my bird knowledgeable friends when I was considering getting another, and she recommended a female bird because there was a higher chance Ari would get along with her more than a male bird. So Tofu has been DNA checked and female certified. However, way back when I got Ari, I never got him slash her checked. Green cheek conure genders can only be confirmed through DNA tests, and there wasn't really any important reason to know Ari's gender at the time. So I just didn't. Over the years, I've just started calling him my big man because of the way he acted and behaviors he displayed felt very obnoxiously masculine, but it was always more of a gut feeling above anything else. But I am now facing a possible reality that my bird I've had for 7 years, that I've been headcanoning is male, could have been female this whole time and is the potential mother of these confusing eggs. Because, yes, birds don't need a male around to lay eggs. Think about it like chickens. They just be laying eggs out the wazoo without a rooster in sight. They don't care. Boom, egg. If it's a girl bird, that thing can lay eggs whether you or a male bird wants it to or not. So in this situation, Ari possibly being a girl is the thing that's blowing my mind the most. But one quick peek at their little bird booty hole swiftly gave me the answer. It was definitely tofu. If you know, you know. I'm just saying, laying 3 eggs a quarter the size of your whole body biologically does something to you. Anyway, I immediately booked a vet visit for tofu. Laying eggs drains birds of their calcium and overall health, so I wanted to make sure she was generally okay. The vet took a look at her and was like, she looks fine, she's acting fine, we'll give her some vitamins. But she's still got more eggs in her. What? Tofu, how many of those things you're gonna cook up? Also, we gotta limit this whole ordeal to as minimal as possible, please, because that vet bill was not fun. We can't be making this a routine occurrence. It's no mystery, laying eggs can also be pretty dangerous for birds. There's a chance it could get stuck, and the bird just dies. And to be honest, I really didn't want that to happen. So every egg meant an extra mountain of stress and anxiety for me! Yippee! The vet told me conures typically lay eggs every other day, so once she goes a few days without laying any, then I can come back and get her another checkup to really make sure she's all good. So I let time pass, and in total, Tofu ended up laying 8 freaking eggs! She was not supposed to lay that many. Normally, conures lay clutches of like 4 or 5, so she basically laid 2 birds worth of eggs. I don't know what to do. But all right, she's finally done. We can now move on to the second step in the what to do when your bird lays eggs without your permission plan. I have to swap out the eggs for fake ones. If I just yoink Tofu's eggs away, she's gonna be like, what the my eggs? Dude, what the hell? I just laid those. And she's biologically programmed to start laying more to replace them. Luckily, my friends Jordan and Kelsey had some fake conure eggs because coincidentally, their bird laid eggs like 6 months prior to Tofu, so they already went through this process and were definitely supplying me with mental support. They lent me their fake eggs, I swapped them out, and perfect. Tofu is now trying to be a mother of 8 balls of plastic. After a few weeks of them not hatching, she'll move on, forget all about them, and everything will return to normal. It was a successful heist, as in I gave them both treats, stole all their eggs right in front of them, and they did not notice. You might be realizing, even though Tofu's eggs won't hatch, I still am in possession of actual real bird eggs that may or may not be fertilized. Yep, as much as Ari could have been the mother, he could also be the father. We don't know. Big drama. Are you the father? More like, is there even a father? After consulting with the vet and various bird resources, I basically had to make sure no birds could start growing in them just in case. Even though it's very likely they were just empty little chicken eggs, we couldn't run the risk. By the various resources aforementioned, I was given a few options. I was told I could smash them, which felt a tad bit too violent for me. Aw, Tofu, are these your little eggs? The first eggs you've ever laid in your life? Absolutely not. I could freeze them, just put them in a little container, pop them in the freezer, and there you go. But the last option, which sounded the most insane in my opinion, was to boil them. Make tiny little boiled eggs. Why does that one sound the most deranged and psychopathic? I know people consume all types of bird eggs all over the world, but boiling my own conure's eggs just feels way past the line in mental sanity. So I popped them in the freezer to hang on to whatever humanity I had left after all this, and
They've been there ever since. I still have them. I'll go to grab a popsicle and be like, oh, hello, tofu eggs. I don't know. Even though they won't hatch, they still feel special. They're my little baby tofus, little baby eggs. I don't want to just throw them away like they're nothing. I'll just keep them in my freezer forever, because that's somehow the most sane option I was given. Some people might be like, Jaden, you should have tried to let them hatch. But you do not understand. I am absolutely, definitely not qualified to raise baby birds. I promise this was the best thing to do for everyone. For me, for the eggs, for Ari and Tofu. God knows Ari would have been an awful father. Or mother. So that's what I've been dealing with over the past few months. Tofu's fine now. She's essentially back to normal. I have since removed the secret nest drawer they have claimed. I'm sure they weren't too happy about that one, but hey, you reap what you sow. People will tell me, oh, you're the reason I want a bird. And I always think to myself, man, well, that's unfortunate. The majority of people are not suited to own a bird. Case one, they can cut through furniture like chainsaws. Case two, they could lay eggs and curse you to put them in the freezer like the egg murderer you are. Or worse. I love my birds with all my heart, but if anyone ever asks me if they make good pets, I turn into the biggest hater. And if you're a good bird owner, you'd probably agree with me. Birds are beautiful, intelligent, loyal companions. But they're also knife tornadoes who can force you to question your own mortality as you spend a fortune on vet bills. Back in April, Chikoa started teasing their newest project, Chikoa Park. Despite them not revealing any follow-up details at all, I was obviously frothing at the mouth. Over the next few months, information slowly started being unveiled until finally, teaser photos. Oh my god. Chikoa is real. I had to figure out how to go. But to anyone who knows how Japan works, you'd understand this is a much more difficult mission to accomplish than suggested, because practically everything is executed through randomized lotteries. You can't just camp a website and refresh 5 times a second in hopes of being the first to buy all the tickets to resell, like the barbaric ways of the West. You apply alongside 100,000 million people, then pray on your hands and knees to the gacha overlords, knowing you ultimately have no power in this world whatsoever. I lit my manifestation candles and let the overlords choose my fate when I secured tickets. Chikoa, thank you for shining your light down on me. I figured since I'm gonna be flying all the way back to Japan for the park, I might as well spend my time as surrounded by Chikoa as I can. So I ended up turning it into the most jam-packed Chikoa-themed trip I possibly could. Sarah, good friend and fellow Chikoa enjoyer, and I hopped on a plane and sped off to Tokyo to experience possibly the most obsessive yet exciting time of our lives. After landing, sleeping, and waking up bright and early, I was practically buzzing with excitement, knowing today was the day I was going to witness the most anticipated Chikoa event the franchise has created yet. Equipped to live through the most memorable day of my life, we headed off to the park. As we were driving, my head was still buzzing with questions about what the event was even gonna be like. The promotion of the whole thing had been super secretive. I really didn't know what to expect going into it. The car pulled up, and we were greeted by giant Chikoa and friends wrapped around the building. This is how I knew it was gonna be huge. Please prepare yourself. We walked through a very hypnotizing Chikoa portal that opened up to the welcoming first room. You could sit in Raku's car, see Shisa and Ramen Yoroi-san chatting together, and even spot a cheeky little Momonga and Furuhonya. Also, naturally, there is a huge wall of Chikoa hats and headbands for purchase right out the gate so you could walk around sporting your Chikoa Oshi. I will say they went all out on the character headband selection. Almost every single guy in the series was there, including the random enemies. As someone who tends to like super obscure side characters in series,
It warmed my heart. Deeper into the room, you can find a real-life replica of Chikawa's actual home. Please don't disturb them too much, though. They're very busy studying for their reading exam. Good luck, Chikawa. I know you can do it this time, buddy. What was super cool was the specialized little photo booths they had. You and a friend, or if you're a lone wolf Chikawa enjoyer, that's cool too, sit down at one of the logs and are given the option to take a photo with either Chikawa, Hachiware, or Usagi. Whichever character you choose pops out to join your photo with their own personalized animation, which was such a wonderfully cute attention to detail. Sarah and I both freaked out when a shy little Chikawa shuffled its way over to us, and everyone in the room watched as we took photo after photo after photo, squealing at every single one. Walking by, we encountered a helpless Hachiware stuck in a ditch. Besides sitting there with him while he yelled for help, there was unfortunately nothing we could do for this poor fella as we stared at our own pitiful reflections above us. Knowing they recreated and built a part of the manga that made me cry gave me a very strange mixture of bittersweet feelings, but ultimately it was too cute to fully question the morality of it. To continue into the next section, you have to wander your way through the discombobulating mirror maze of the nightmare-inducing elephant. The lights were flashing various colors, the floor and walls were painted all sorts of disorienting patterns, everything was super wiggly, and I may or may not have crashed into a couple mirrors, who's to say. Sarah and I stumbled out of the very humbling maze eventually, but as staff came over and gave us Chikawa-themed 3D glasses, we realized we weren't safe yet, as there were multiple screens of various enemies hacking and slashing and call fat spitting in our direction. You really don't realize how many evil, treacherous creatures there are in the series until you sit in front of every single one as they try to get you. In fact, I'm realizing now a lot of the experiences Chikawa Park puts you through are the evil, messed up, life-threatening parts. True Chikawa fans know the series isn't all sunshine and rainbows like you'd expect looking at it from the outside, but that is the part about Chikawa that I love the most. Even in the most wholesome of lands where there can be giant rivers of miso soup, meadows of plants bearing toasted buns, and friendly neighbors that just want to buy cute pajamas, you can still get hit with 8 whole days being kidnapped, starved, and thrown in goblin jail for eating the wrong stupid-ass mushroom. Such is life. Don't stress too much, though. As you can see, things find a way of working out as the giant cyclops Ode thrashes his way through the goblins at true scale. I really liked this section. After you all nearly escape being eaten by goblins, you're led into the shelter of a nearby temple. Chikawa and Hachiware bear curious looks, innocently wondering what could await them ahead. And as you pull back the curtain of the next room, oh, it's the evil, dark, and twisted snake that curses everyone with eternal yearning for the mines, already amassing an endless hallway of brainwashed civilians. Which masochist on the design team pitched this one? Who was it? No, they even have crystallized Usagi. There's a tried and true hater amongst the Chikawa Park designers, and honestly, they deserve a raise. As you try to hurry your way out of the temple, Hachiware is seen having to unsheathe his tiny claws in self-defense of a guard. Up ahead, Chikawa hides behind a mirror as the snake tries to zap them with his crystallizing gaze. It's implied the beam reflects off the mirror and kills the snake, but they don't specifically show it. Yeah, I suppose we should draw the line at actual death in the silly little Chikawa Park experience. Everyone is busted up and bruised, but finally free to leave the malevolent temple. What lies past these doors? Well, with the craziest luck, we happened to be there as Chikawa and Momonga were out that day to greet people. I almost crumpled to the floor right then and there in front of every single employee. Hi, Momonga. I'm a big fan. Don't listen to what the people are saying about you on the internet. They were so cute and energetic, and they even had Chikawa Park headbands of their own favorite or related characters. Any knowers. After many, many photos with our fave, I don't care if you hate him, you can pry Momonga away from my cold dead fingers. We were led upstairs to the second floor of the park, and as we ascended, my jaw was left behind.
The entire second floor of Chikoa Park was completely dedicated to custom, exclusive, never-before-seen Chikoa merchandise. Which, yes, does imply the full story of the walkthrough experience on the first floor is you living peacefully in the world of Chikoa, getting trapped in an inconceivable nightmare maze, somehow escaping only to find yourself being jumped by every violent creature within a 10-mile radius, being thrown in goblin jail, breaking out and running away to a nearby temple, finding yourself surrounded by enslaved creatures controlled against their will to do grueling manual labor for eternity by an evil snake that crystallizes one of your best friends, watching poor anxious Chikoa pushed to kill in order to release the curse, and everyone escaping within an inch of their lives. I literally could not have written it better myself. That is quite literally the best representation of the series you could possibly present. And as a treat for getting through all of it, you can now spend all of your money. To say it was overwhelming, it is an understatement. There were 5 whole organized areas for shopping and merch. The Chikoa section had big plushies, small plushies, keychain plushies, plushie slap bracelets. The characters came in any size, shape, or form you wanted, and it was very pleasing on the eyes, might I say. Hachiwate's area was more centered around decorative items and collectibles. Pens, necklaces, notebooks, tote bags, more keychains of quite literally every character in the series. Household items like plates, glasses, utensils, this really funny soap dispenser based on Chikoa getting a parasite. Over in Usagi's shop, they had apparel, lots of cute shirts, jackets, socks, and literally my favorite item of the entire store, the character backpacks. They're the perfect size, so freaking cute, and you can show off more of your plushies in the front pocket. Yes, I got the Momonga one. You'll have to kill me to silence my truth. Across the floor was a themed area for popcorn, cookies, various other snacks, but the part that stopped Sarah and I in our tracks was this custom keychain maker section. There were so many charm options. Letters, shapes, characters, references. Sarah and I spent like 15 minutes sitting on the floor together trying to figure out what we even wanted to make. There were too many possibilities. This was probably a lot to digest all at once. So to take a little breather, we can play the little carnival games around the corner. Meatball Korogashi is simple. Roll meatballs down the chute to try and get it in the skee ball hole. You get a trial roll, which Sarah and I both sunk, and then 3 real meatball rolls, which Sarah and I both utterly failed. In the other game, Kimono Shoe Catcher, you had to fling the butterfly-ified Chikoa, Hachiwate, and Usagi into spider webs. Kinda messed up, but look, I'm here to win! I didn't get a single one in the net. I was just trying to keep them safe. Sarah actually got one in and won a giant Chikoa pillow. Questionable morality yet again being presented in this twisted establishment, but God, it's a good pillow. Chikoa Park is such a wonderful celebration of the franchise, and I'm so happy it's been successful enough to earn such a grand building and experience. There are so many little details crafted with love and dedication that any Chikoa fan would appreciate, and the inclusive of all the characters means there's something for fans of any creature. Yes, even that evil goddamn star that I want to splat with a fly swatter. Alright, well, that's, why are you... You're looking at me a little funny, and I don't know what you want from... Okay, yes, we got a shit ton of merchandise. Everyone watched as Sarah and I frolicked around the merch floor, quite literally like Jaden in a Chikoa shop. It took like 15 minutes for the employees to ring up each of our halls. Everyone was happy for us and encouraged us to get things, but Sarah and I couldn't help but visibly succumb to the shame. With what broken Japanese I knew, I tried to make